Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I've never been prouder of any team I've ever coached. Would have been a lot better if they just counted Eric's shot and we could have gone home 2 hours ago. But I'm just proud of these guys for hanging in there, and especially Paul, because Paul was just... I can't describe how awful he was for most of that part of that game. And for him to come up and make some of the plays he made, finally, he was even smart enough to miss the dunk so he could get a three-point play.
I mean, you know, I kept blowing layups at the end of the game. I kept just praying and asking God, just please let me make some type of big play, and hopefully we come up with this victory.
I can't even feel my legs right now. You know, it was a tough game. We battled it out. It's just great that we got the victory, but we got to turn around, you know, today and get a big win over West Virginia.
I could think of about six different times that we controlled or had either a lead or a chance to take the lead at the end of four or five of overtimes, and we found ways not to do that, and Syracuse found a way to win the game. And I'm sure when the summertime, I'll look back and say, what a historic battle it was. Right now, it's a loss, and there's no other way. I mean, you know, we wanted to get to Friday. We didn't get to Friday.
The date was March 12, 2009. The Syracuse Orange were 24-8 after beating Seton Hall 89-74, heading into their second Big East tournament game in as many days. They'd face UConn for the second time of the season. The first game between the two teams was played in Connecticut, and the Orange lost 63-49, this time in Madison Square Garden. The Big East tournament in front of a sold-out crowd of 19,375 fans. The game tipped off at 9:36 at night, and it finally ended after six overtimes at 1:22 in the morning. The game that spanned 2 days took 3 hours and 46 minutes to complete. I'm Sean, alongside my good buddy Joe. This is Q-Story, the six overtime game, Syracuse in UConn. So let's relive the Syracuse UConn six overtime game together. I spent 3 hours rewatching this game the first time, and then I actually watched all six overtimes again just to prepare and refresh my memory on what had happened. Just an amazing game, you know. It, hands down, Joe, probably the ultimate cardiac Cuse game. I mean, with UConn only getting it up to a 6-point lead, and the missed shots and how close they were to winning before overtime and then during some of the overtimes, the constant miscues from UConn as well. I mean, they had a couple shots to win it in overtime. It was just amazing. 244 total points would be scored in that game, 102 of them coming in overtime. The 244 points that would shatter a Big East tournament record of 189 when Villanova and Pittsburgh played two overtimes in March of 1998. So, and I mean, Joe, what'd you think when you went back and watched it?
Oh, the funny thing about it was, again, obviously, I think we all know it was a great game, but going back and just rewatching it, just how many big plays and big players, big name players, players that played in the NBA got drafted, how many big plays I remember was one of the biggest things that resonated with me, just going back and looking at it and actually realizing how fresh a lot of plays and a lot of things in that game were when I actually saw them again. It was like, yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday. Yeah. So, I mean, I went through and I watched it too, just like you did, you know, watched the first half, watched the second half, broke it down to kind of, but it's hard. You know, you want to look at all the first half and the second half, but you know, all the,
I know, you know,
all
that
the, all the meat and potatoes was in the overtimes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so. The game itself, the one thing that I would remember specifically, or that I didn't remember specifically about the game that I realized when I watched it, is how absolutely aggressive both teams were, and like the, you know,
oh yeah,
just the absolute rivalry between these two when it was the Big East, and you know the refs letting them play. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
oh, they let them play, all right.
They let them play, yeah. And it was brutal. So I mean, what'd you think? Did you remember it like that? Did you remember that all how rough and aggressive both sides of the ball were from both teams?
Oh yeah. I definitely remember that. I remember the first half being the way that it was. I kind of forgot the, you know, 8-minute drought from both teams there when it was 40-44. It seemed like forever. I know we went back and when I looked at it, I think the first 8 minutes of the second half, I think we had 3 field goals and 6 turnovers. So but then we turned it around and 3:56 left to go. We were up 7. So for a little while there in the second half, especially near the end, it looked like we were going to win that game. So even rewatching it, I'm looking at it like, how did UConn come? How did we let them sneak back in here?
But I know. And then they could say the same thing about every single overtime.
Exactly.
First 5, I should say, because as we'll go over in a minute, we just pulled away in the second. But the aggressive play, I took some clips. There's some great audio. Let's listen.
A line off balance 3. Edwards the rebound. Edwards called for the foul. As he went swinging around and knocked down a couple orange.
What a shame, because he made some rebounding effort.
3 fouls on Gavin Edwards. That's the 10th Connecticut foul. They have a double bonus the rest of the way when it's not offensive.
What a big time snatch. You can see that loose arm just to extricate himself.
Ooh.
And Leo never took a shot like that because he wasn't under the glass that often. But Andy showing some toughness.
Trying along the baseline. Turn it over.
That's 2. He's got to use his head under control. He can be solid and then occasionally a little reckless.
Anawaku just threw the beat to the ground. He turned the beat around.
Well, you mentioned earlier some banging that goes on in this building. Sometimes not in the boxing ring either.
It's a fraction of a second away from its 4th straight loss in Big East tournament play. Now they have the ball in a 3-point lead with just more than 2 minutes left in overtime. Price lost it. Flynn walks away. There was contact as Adrian tried to run back and no call as he got knocked down. I don't think he was going to catch Flynn, but he was knocked down.
Diebendorf should have been called for a foul. I mean, that was a silly play. They got away with it.
And Stanley Robinson has been cramping up. Number of the players on both sides right now look winded. Of course, Syracuse played last night. Connecticut did not.
And this is the play, Sean. Now watch this, Sean. There's no way that can't be called. It would have wiped out the goal. It doesn't make sense to be involved in it. He didn't get in front of him.
Yep, you're right.
Right? I mean,
you're right.
Jim Calhoun complained about it, and the officials basically said it was incidental contact. Clearly not incidental. Now, Diebendorf, you could tell there, was intentionally running into the path of Adrian to make contact and wound up knocking him down.
I mean, he just did. He just did. He ran right into him, and he didn't even need to. They were 6'8" behind the ball.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, that was another thing, too. Those announcers going back, Sean McDonough, Bill Raftery, Jay Billis.
I mean, that was just about to say an awesome call. That's a great trio, right?
Right.
We get 2 a game now most of the time. And with those 3, Billis, Raftery, and McDonough, just brilliant. And you look back on that and you say there was no trio that could have called that game any better than those
two. Oh, no. And the banter back and forth in the overtime is just great. So,
and I love Raftery. I mean, just one of the best, really.
Yeah. So UConn, they had to struggle to kind of scrap back in and get into the game at the end of the half, right? And
yeah, they got back in. And then, you know, basically to close the game out, we all knew what happened.
Well, we had a chance.
We had a chance. And if Diebendorf might have, I think it was Raftery, he said if Diebendorf would have trimmed his fingernails, it may have never been a 6 overtime game.
15 seconds to go. Walker into the lane. Back out for Ostry. Under 10 to go. Ostry dribbling. Ostry heaves one up. The beat snatches and lost it. Walker all alone to lay it in. 1.1 to go. Timeout, Syracuse.
1.1 to go. Length of the court.
Yep.
The beat kept it alive, and Walker snuck in to finish it. Watch Flynn setting the screen on him.
Whoa. The beat did make contact with Flynn. It's an errant pass. Diebendorf at the buzzer. Good! They will check it, but if it stands, it's got another chills Syracuse again. I know it. Buzzer beater to beat Connecticut. Woo! Onions!
Yeah, I still wanted that to work. Jumping on the score table.
Guys.
Yep.
Look at the deflection right to him. I think it's good.
Ooh. Mm. Well, there's separation there, but it's also on the all zeros.
Wow. How much closer can you get?
Let's look up
you
here.
You can't without having to be good, right, Joe?
Boy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
It is simultaneous, it seems.
Now, if they cannot ascertain, they have to have signaled whether.
It's hard to.
It's like one more 10.
It's like it's still on his fingertips there.
Yeah.
With the clock at all zeros. They're about to make a decision. Yeah. And I think they're going to wave it off. They did.
Mm. And the right call.
You have to prepare yourself now for overtime.
Oh, yeah. Get ready.
It's going to be a tough one for Diebendorf and for Syracuse, but
it's so funny because they said you got to prepare yourselves for overtime, and it's going to be a tough one. They had no clue what was in store for them. And that play, Joe, goes down in Syracuse history along with, like, the Pearl half-court shot. In a way, that iconic image of Diebendorf on the table, and it didn't even count. And it was just that good, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it was that good of a play, and I think because of what the game ended up becoming, I think that was the reason why that kind of, you know, cemented. I don't think you see that play being played over and over again if Connecticut goes in and beats us after the first overtime. So
that,
I think it had a little bit to do with
it had to do with the
everything.
The urban legend of the six overtime game. Actually,
right.
You know, I mean, it's just goes along with the whole night
because it was 1/10 away from never happening.
Exactly. Absolutely. So, yeah.
That's why it's such a huge play when it comes to this game.
Yeah.
Because this might not have become what it became if there was one more 10th or he clipped his fingernails.
Yeah. And it was what, 71-71?
71-71, and it was tough going into it because it did seem like there were some guys who got some tired fouls, maybe some foul. You know, usually you don't play for overtime in the regulation, right? So,
right.
You know, guys aren't holding back fouls based upon if they're going to play six overtimes, let alone one overtime, you know. So what worried me going into it, obviously, was – Our mentality going into it after being, you know, that close to winning and knowing that you got to go into overtime against a team like this. You got multiple players. I think we had three players at that point with four fouls.
Yeah, it was Rick Jackson, Onuwaku.
Onuwaku and Ogunat.
And Ogunat, yep.
Those are the things that I was worried about. I can remember being worried about that 10 years ago. So
yeah, and Syracuse played the night before. UConn had the bye coming into that game, so they were fresh.
Yep.
And Syracuse was, you know, going into overtime and a second straight game playing basketball. And, you know, by the way, which doesn't get me, these were two ranked teams at the time, too. Syracuse was ranked 20th. UConn was ranked 4th. They were ranked in the top 5 during this game, which is amazing. So the first time, the first overtime starts, 71-71. Connecticut led by 4, 80-76. There was a minute 31 left. Routens hit a 3, okay? And then Stanley Robinson from UConn went to the free throw line. And it was, Syracuse was down by 2. 81-79. It was Flynn coast to coast dumping it off.
That's a
this play. Now, if you listen to this, I appreciate everybody listening to this. But if you get the chance, go at least watch the overtimes, because this play with Johnny Flynn driving to the basket and dumping it back to Rick Jackson down by 2 and setting up the tie was brilliant.
Weakest free throw shooter on the floor for Connecticut, and the first one spun off.
Rick Jackson is back into Syracuse.
No timeouts for either team. So on a make or a miss, the players are on their own without the benefit of any more help in a timeout from these Hall of Fame coaches.
Now this will decide what they try to do at the other end.
Kemba Walker cannot allow Johnny Flynn to get the ball.
They made one out of two, a two-point game. Two to tie, three for the lead, or perhaps the win for Syracuse. No timeouts left, reminiscent of Marquette Villanova early today. Flynn heads for the bucket. Flynn with the beat on him. Off to Jackson! Still time for UConn, no timeouts. 4.7 to go.
Gotta come up and play him.
Yeah, Syracuse lets them inbound the ball to Walker. With two, Walker contested and will head for double overtime.
Does it get any better?
I mean, that play was beautiful. Rick Jackson with the slam at the end of that one. And then going into the second overtime. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was just going to add kind of to what you – I mean, one of the things that I was looking at and – kind of jotting down as I was watching it, I knew that there was eight people that fouled out, and we were talking about the foul trouble, and Christoph Ogenaut, he fouled out within the first 33 seconds of the first overtime. It's 4:27 left, so right off the bat, we had one of our big guys out. I thought he had played a pretty good game, and again, just the way that we came back from four with a minute and a half to go. It was an overtime where you could tell both teams were coming out and trying. I mean, we both scored, 10 points? So they came out early hitting shots, and we kind of matched them. And then we had that little spurt at the end where we tied it up. And it was, you could tell, no team was going to back down even after the first overtime, you could tell. And based on what you were saying about Johnny Flynn, if you're somebody or a Syracuse fan that's never got to see Johnny Flynn play, you got to go on YouTube and just look up his you know, the highlights in Syracuse and everything like that, because he was one special point guard. We only had him for 2 years, and especially this year that we were watching him, it was a very special year. And you know, you wish you could have point guards like that making plays like he just did. So
yeah, and heading into the second overtime, it was 81-81 at the end of the first, and not a whole lot of offense in this overtime. Connecticut led by three with under 2 minutes left. Well, just about 2 minutes, 1:58. Flynn converted a three-point play to tie it. After Connecticut made some free throws, Dievendorf, he converted one of two from the charity stripe, and Connecticut had four field goal attempts in the last 35 seconds.
That was a scramble.
It was a scramble.
That was a scramble. That was that whole thing. It went from the first overtime looking like a poised, poised teams that were ready to go in and get it done in the first 5 minutes, and then the second one, it looked like they're kind of. I don't know, scrambling. It just seemed like they were just trying to, I don't know if they were tired or they were just trying to get it done, but there was a lot of scrambling, this was the first of many overtimes where Paul Harris had missed a few, right there at the rim. It looked like Onuwaku, he got tired, and with a minute 18 to go in the second overtime, he got a frustration foul. That's what it looked like, a tired foul, whatever, but he fouled out for the game with 1:18 to go in the second overtime, and like I said, the two biggest things is it was just a sloppy second overtime. Harris missed a couple chippies down low, and Kemba Walker back rimmed that last second shot. That last second three by Kemba, that was, I believe he was a freshman. So
he was.
I mean, we at that time didn't know what he was going to turn into. And, you could look up different videos and look up what he did his senior year or his last year at UConn. It's incredible. But, for him to come in and he played pretty good, I thought, in the spot that he played for Jerome Dyson, who was out, one of their better guards. But he back rimmed that three, man. And it was just I was really, really nervous because that shot looked good.
Yeah. And here it was.
You want to play three?
It looms as a possibility. Price, Walker, with Adrian Thabit and Robinson.
And Adrian, the guy that's been very helpful in that foul line area.
There he is. And he has Walker. Oh. Passed up an open three in favor of the drive. The miss.
Oh,
Robinson in the right spot. Thabit tried to flush it. Walker is there. Rejected by Jackson. And it hit Walker on the way out of bounds.
How good is that action? Wall to wall, effort, extension, involvement. The cheek.
Syracuse ball. Jim Boeheim held up one finger. He wants the last shot of the second overtime. Wants the chance to win it without giving Connecticut that chance. Walker guarding Flynn. 12 seconds to go. Double overtime. Flynn very near the center court line. Jackson screens for him. Flynn from deep. No. 4 seconds to go. Ahead it goes to Walker for the win. Off the back rim.
So close.
Wow. We have seen a lot. This is as good as I've been involved in. What do you think?
Unbelievable. I thought that Johnny Flynn kind of settled for that jumper.
Yep.
Yeah, he took a quick shot. They could have, at the very least, they could have taken the last shot. And that's what Coach wanted him to do. It ended up in the second overtime, 87-87.
Yeah, and I remember back when I was watching it live that I thought when Kemba Walker, when that left and it looked good, I thought we were going to get punished for Flynn making a mistake because I thought that he should have taken it to the hole and tried to be aggressive and get to the line, or should have definitely at least waited to where it was the last shot. And like Bill has said, he settled for an outside jumper and it almost came back and bit us. But, you know, it didn't. And on to the third overtime.
Start the third overtime, 87-87. Syracuse would be down by as much as six. This would be the largest lead for UConn all night. But the Orange would come back by doing what? By putting on the press. That's what they would do. They'd get back in the game. Each team scored 11 points again at the end of the buzzer, tied up. Anything before I play the end of that one?
Yeah, this was, again, it was a strong overtime. There's 11 points scored by both teams. The key fallout on this one was Stanley Robinson falling out with 2:59 to go. And he had a great game. He was all over the place. He had a season. That was a season high. His best game, 29 points in that game. Like you said, we were losing by 6 points with 3:09 and then with 2:06. And then, you know, Andy Routins, I know he hit a two-pointer he hit two free throws, I'm sorry. And Johnny Flynn got a steal after that that led to some points. And again, Routins, he stepped up and he hit some big, solid threes throughout these overtimes to keep us in games. And, you know, he hit that three with 11 seconds to go. It sealed the deal for another overtime.
Well, don't foul him.
They wanted to foul somebody else. Price, the veteran, short.
Dean Dorf's going to tell him he's wrong.
I don't care if you played last night or you didn't. Connecticut didn't. Everybody has to be tired now.
Timeout Syracuse.
Timeout Syracuse. Jim Boeheim, before the game, said his biggest question was, can we rebound? And lately, they haven't.
Even if Price makes this, still a one-possession game. And if Syracuse can get something going to the basket, he can still go for a two, but that may open up a three.
After three straight misses by the Huskies, a make by Price. Three-point game, 20 seconds to go, third overtime. And now the age-old question, if you're Connecticut in the right situation, do you foul before they can shoot a three? Routins makes it about point. Yes, Routins for three. 12 seconds to go. Plenty of time for Connecticut and a timeout. Got to get to the rim. Price, a deep NBA three just short. Adrian at the buzzer. No. Overtime number four. And triple overtime agrees with the Routins family.
How good is this? Leo, you're going to have to move over on the couch, baby. Your son has.
So I mean, the calls are so good, man. I had to put them in there.
You have to. It was part of the event.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
To speak now, you know.
Yeah, 98-98 at the end of that, and just
I want to throw in there too that there was another part in that overtime, in that third overtime, where Paul Harris had a couple chippies that he missed as well. So
yeah, he did, and he had a bunch all night. But it's so funny because at the end of
that was why Jim Boeheim said what he said in the beginning.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
About him being, because he missed so many up close, and he did it. I mean, I went back. I see it's in my notes. He did it the second, the third, and the fourth overtime.
Yeah,
I remember. There are specific times where he had right near the rim, missed it. And even had, in some occasions, his own rebound and still missed the next one, too.
Yeah,
so
putting him back right under the rim.
There's a reason why he had 22 rebounds.
Yeah, exactly. And UConn with the chance again at the end of an overtime to just put this thing away and put Syracuse out of their misery, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, so, no. By the way, that's a team going into that overtime, you know, they're starting five and everyone, and those are five players that played in the NBA. No, they didn't all get drafted. I think four out of five of them got drafted. I don't think Jeff Adrian did, but I think Jeff Adrian played in the league for a couple of years. So it was a strong, strong UConn team. And Gavin Edwards came in, and he played very well off the bench too.
So it was Rick Jackson fouling out and at the in the fourth overtime here. And who would come
early
in?
Early too, with the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, and who would come in for Rick Jackson? None other than Chris Joseph. A young Chris Joseph would come into the game, and they put him at center. A position
first
he did not,
minutes of the game.
A position he does not play. And then Price would hit a field goal, Connecticut up by two. Diefendorf answered right back to tie the game again for the 20th time with 1:51 left at this point. 20 ties already. You know, each team would have two more possessions, but the score never changed. And it ended at 104-104 at the end of the fourth.
Yeah. And again, a low scoring.
Another 6 points in 5 minutes for each team.
Yeah. Well, this was when, again, people started to, like you said, Rick Jackson, he fouled out at the 4:24 mark, and Hashim Thabeet fouled out at the 3:51 mark. So this is basically when they lost their center, and we lost pretty much all of our centers. So, and, you know, Thabeet, he fouled out 19 points, 14 rebounds, 6 blocks. He had a good game, but it was good to get him out of there because he was a problem down low. And the other big thing that I remember seeing was Johnny Flynn being able to get to the rim there for about 40 seconds to go, and he missed a layup that he would hit probably 9 out of 10 times. I mean, the look on Boeheim's face, I mean, I went back and watched it again, like you said, this morning, and the look on Boeheim's face is like, oh, I've seen him make that, you know, every time he takes it. So it was a great drive, and it was a reverse that just bounced off the rim weird, and, you know, Harris missed a couple at the rim again in that overtime, and it was just another sloppy one where some main guys is fouled out. And again, like you said, tied 104-104. We had Chris Joseph playing center.
I know, so. And no one knew who he was. Imagine that. Here's the call at the end of the fourth.
Shot clock and the game clock. One timeout left for each team. Price will handle with Austrian Walker. Edwards and Adrian, Thabeet and Robinson have fouled out for Connecticut.
I get into something now. Don't get stuck late in the shot clock.
They're up on Price. He gets an Edwards screen. 8 to shoot. Price, floater, no. Routens has it and has time. 7 seconds left. Routens has help. Flynn underneath. Harrison close. Missed again. Harris one more time. No.
There it is.
A nightmare for Paul Harris at the rim tonight.
What better opportunity?
No Thabeet, no dice.
Goodness.
Jim Boeheim wanted the foul.
We got a five-bagger. Well, they don't call those readily.
No question.
Crunch time.
Yeah, 104-104 at the end of that one. And going into the fifth overtime, Price, he would score the first 4 points of the fifth overtime. And then Diefendorf was called for his fifth foul. Now, since we've got all of our those are our foul outs. There was 8 foul outs in the game, 4 from our team, 4 from their team. Here's a call on all of ours.
And a foul.
That's who? Robinson.
Robinson wasn't in at the end of regulation. He was fouled by Ongenon, and he has fouled out.
Yep.
That is a big story as we enter overtime because there is foul difficulty aplenty on both sides. Ongenon gone. Onowaku has 4 fouls. Jackson with 4 for Syracuse. Shostry the miss. Tipped out, and there's a foul. And it's on Syracuse, I believe. It's on Onowaku, and he has fouled out. Jackson gets called for the charge, and that's a big call. The beat playing with 4 fouls. And Jackson has fouled out. Make him shoot over. Price, again, splitting the defense. He's done it all night long. And now Diefendorf has fouled out, and they'll have to go to another player who hasn't played a second all night long.
Well, what a play by Kemba Walker. Saved this ball, and a nice catch alert by Jeff Adrian. That's a winning play by Kemba Walker.
Come up big, picked up that charge, that particular play.
Diefendorf, 22 points. four assists, and of course, on a historic night when many images will be remembered, none more so than his three at the buzzer that was waved off at the end of regulation when it looked like he had given Syracuse a three-point lead. Justin Thomas, a walk-on, has come in for Syracuse. He has played in 9 games this year for a total of 21 minutes and has scored 4 points all season long. That's how deep down the bench they are now.
And that was it. Justin Thomas would come in. Who's Justin Thomas? Well, he was someone.
Walk-on guard.
He was someone that night. Flynn scored and then made 2 free throws, and he tied things up. And then, what's his name? Harrelson?
Harrelson. He made a little jumper, yep.
Yep, and then Flynn, again,
made 2 more free
fouled.
Throws.
Yep, and he made 2 more free throws. Like I said, he's going to go 16 for 16 in this game. And Connecticut had 2 attempts in the last 15 seconds, but they failed. It ended up, again, with Connecticut at the end of the overtime with the ball.
Yeah, so, and I mean, that's just – that happened over and over again. It's just at this point it seemed like this game was never going to end. You know, you thought Diemendorf hit it, and it, you know, it wasn't good. Thought Kemba Walker was going to hit that last-minute jumper. Didn't do it. You know, then third overtime, they had a whole bunch of – what did you say, four shots or 3 shots? And I mean – you just kept seeing over and over. I mean, Johnny Flynn missed a layup in the fourth overtime, and then they failed to do something. And then Harris comes down and misses it twice, point blank, right at the end. So at this point, you don't think that they're going to do anything. They come out again, fifth overtime, and it was slow. Like you said, we got down 4. Diemendorf followed out with 2 minutes to go, and at that point, we still hadn't scored in that overtime. And I don't know if it was just Johnny Flynn just knowing that he had to step up, but he scored, I think, with 1:55 left in that overtime. We scored the first points, and then he ended up getting 4 more. He was being aggressive and getting to the line, and he was scored all 6 for us. And he himself kept us really, I mean, in the game. At that point, you had an undersized 6'7" guard or 6'7" Chris Joseph in the middle with Routins and a Paul Harris on the outside, and then a walk-on guard, Justin Thomas, up with Johnny Flynn. And, you know, UConn at that point, they were starting to lose some guys too. Gavin Edwards, who came off the bench and was one of their last, you know, solid big guys, he fouled out in that fifth overtime with 58 seconds to go. So, again, it's just one of those things where it just didn't seem like it was ever going to end. It was just one of those matches that you just – you know, it almost seemed like it was like one of those Rocky fights, like the first couple ones where they're just like just on each other, just holding each other up. Can't do anything, you know.
I know, it was ridiculous. It would end, that overtime would end at 110, the end of the fifth call right here.
At 110 in the afternoon or in the morning.
Yeah, right.
Johnny Flynn. How does he have any gas left in the tank? Sean, you said it. He exploded to the rim and now stepping to the line. This is big time pressure.
He thought he missed that one. Had enough energy to hop up and down as it was on the way. He got the bounce. He's the owner of 30 points. Timeout, Jim Calhoun. Chance to win. Syracuse has made 13 out of 15 free throws in the overtimes. Price, Ostry, 7 seconds. Price, Flynn on him. Price from very deep, off the mark, in the corner. Adrian, no!
And that was a good look, man.
It was.
I thought Adrian was going to hit that.
Coming up from New York City.
Adrian's had the last couple of finishing shots unable to convert, but once again, settling deep.
Once again, UConn with the last shot of the overtime, and they just could not hit. That ends at 110-110 going into the 6th overtime. It was You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC blasting over the speakers inside Madison Square Garden, and that's how the 6th overtime would start. The Orange, they won the tip. Johnny Flynn was quoted as saying, guys, if we win this tip, we're going to win this game. Let's get this thing over with. Anyway, he was just... Johnny Flynn was just ready for this thing to end. And you want to talk about effort. You want to talk about someone never giving up. It was Johnny Flynn in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Because.
And we were running out of guys. And both teams were running out of guys.
Absolutely. So. They won the tip, and it was almost like nothing for Routins. He just drilled a long 3. That was their first lead. 3 points was
in overtime.
Their first lead in any of these overtimes. And Harris actually added back-to-back buckets and free throws pushed Syracuse out in front. You know, obviously, this is where they won it, but they got out in front 118 to 110.
They don't run, yeah.
Yeah, and that was as close as Connecticut would get the rest of the game, and we could see it was coming to a close. But, you know, just amazing, amazing game. You know,
yeah. They got within six there a couple times, but.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Well, the final on this was 127-117. Syracuse ran away with it with a couple of nobodies at the time, one being Chris Joseph on the court. You know, obviously Chris Joseph would become a reliable player for us, but amazing. A freaking yeah. Amazing. Now, we're going to get into everybody's stories. I've got some. I asked a question on the socials a couple days ago asking for your stories of where you were. Everybody, yeah. Every big SU fan knows where they were during this game. And, you know, we'll go over that. But here was Coach and Johnny Flynn immediately following the win.
Coach Boeheim, you thought Aaron Diefendorf had won it 42 hours ago in regulation. How'd your team persevere and come out on top?
I just got to tell you, I'm more proud of this team tonight than any team I've ever coached because we had nothing. We had nobody out there for a long time. Connecticut had their good players for a couple, three overtimes. We finally got them out of there, and then it was kind of even. But the heart we showed coming back from 6 points down in one overtime, the plays we made, I've never been prouder of a team than these guys tonight. They just kept fighting. They would not lose this game. I'm very proud of this team. I can't say enough about them. And this guy next to you, he's got the biggest heart of anybody I've ever seen.
Johnny Flynn was incredible. How terrific was his performance tonight, particularly in the overtime?
It was unbelievable the whole game. I mean, he was really spectacular. I don't know how he could last that long and do what he did. I really don't. And he made some threes. I don't know where he got them from. You know, you draw up plays and you just hope. And tonight they work, but it's because of these kids. They were unbelievable tonight.
All right, thanks, Coach. Johnny, what a game. What did you keep telling your teammates after each successive overtime?
You know, first and foremost, I just want to give all the glory to God. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have put a game out like this. But, you know, I just kept telling my teammates, this is destined for us. You know, we're down five with one and a half minutes left, and somehow we come back and tie it up. I said, you know, we played this long, all we could do is win the game. So I just give it to my teammates. We played hard and really got a good win over here.
Congratulations on an incredible win. You got to play West Virginia tonight, man. So get some rest.
Definitely.
And they would. They would play West Virginia that day, and that game would
go into overtime.
Go into overtime.
That'll be one.
They did win. They won that game 74-69. Syracuse faced Louisville in the Big East Championship, but fatigue from the past few days set in, and the Cardinals would be crowned champs 76-66 victory. So,
yeah, man.
Just an amazing run in the Big East tournament. A team, a really good Syracuse team. I forget how good that team was until I watched that game. Totally different than what we've seen. The past few years.
Oh, I talked about it today, right? About their big men. Just looking at the size of their big men. I mean, you only hope that Dolje could. I mean, you'd hope to think that he could look like Ojanov by the time he becomes a senior. You know, I mean, you can't ask the same for our centers to be comparable to Onuwaku.
No,
because that's just not going to happen. But just overall, seeing the physicality and like the will. I mean, you look at those guards with Diefendorf and Flynn, the way that they could slash and they could pass. With the big, tough bodies that we had. I mean, it was a completely different type of team that we have, you know, today. So it was great to go back and overlook this game again and kind of look at some of the stuff. I mean, dude, I'm looking at, you know, box scores. Six players had double-doubles. Yeah. Six players had double-doubles. 40 minutes is in a full game, a normal game. And, 10 players played over 40 minutes. Another four played over 25. 40 of 51 we shot from the free throw line.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Imagine if we could do something like that. So, you know, both teams had over 100 field goals. I mean, you look at some of these numbers. It's just
39 for they shot 103 field goals. Did you just say that?
Yeah, well, both teams shot over 100 field goals.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Harris 29 of 22, 10 of them offensive rebounds. Flynn, 34 points, 11 assists. I mean, some of these guys just had – there was just, the stats lines were just ridiculous. And like you said, have that kind of stuff. I mean, Flynn had 17 points in overtime alone along with Harris. He had 20 in overtime alone. And A.J. Price for Connecticut, he had 19 alone just in the overtimes. And Johnny Flynn, if you counted that Seton Hall game with this game, between those first two games of that Big East tournament, he played over 100 minutes.
That's crazy. Yeah, and he became the orange Iron Man of the 08-09 season. I don't know if there's been another player to even come close, but in a season, playing the minutes that he played throughout that season, he was almost never taken out of a game. And
his energy was crazy.
I know. He played 67 to 70 possible minutes that night. He scored 34 points, 26 of them in overtime, like Joe mentioned. Flynn was 16 for 16 from the line and dished out 11 assists. Paul Harris, 29 points, 22 rebounds. He was also great from the line, 13 to 14 before he fouled out after 56 minutes. Devendorf, obviously with one of the most iconic Syracuse basketball screenshots in history, jumping on the scorer's table after hitting that three in regulation to take the lead. As we know, it wouldn't count. But, you know, besides that image being amazing, his play was pretty good too. He had 22 points before fouling out after 61 minutes. And then you had Routon.
I love the rebounds.
I know. What were they at?
78 to 83.
Yeah, 78 to 83. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So, just the numbers are so inflated because they played a game and a half. So it's just
Routon's with a huge three to tie it in one of the overtimes, and then a huge three to take the lead in the sixth overtime. Just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, to piggyback on the Johnny Flynn being the Iron Man, he played all 45 minutes of the very next night against West Virginia. He didn't sit at all.
Yeah,
that whole
crazy
game. Played the whole overtime.
Played the whole overtime too. Yeah.
Yep.
So real quick, we asked everybody on social media, where were you? What do you remember about this game? So I'll tell you my story. It's quick. Okay? It's disappointing.
It can't be as disappointing as mine.
I don't know, man. I was laying in bed after the fourth overtime. I was still awake, and then I woke up and the TV was off. That's all I remember.
Oh, shut up.
I'm serious. I didn't get to watch the fifth and sixth overtime. I fell asleep.
Oh, jeez. Never mind.
Was mine worse than yours?
And you were making fun of mine? At least I watched the whole game.
Oh, my gosh. I fell asleep. I tried so hard. I was laying in bed. That's the worst thing you can do when you watch sports, I think, especially when they run late, is lay in bed.
See, everyone that's listening, he wanted to do this podcast to give himself a reason to watch the fifth and sixth overtime.
Oh, come on.
That's why he watched the overtimes twice, because he's already seen the other part.
Yeah, right?
So.
it was disappointing. I was very, very disappointed. I was very upset.
Let's not get it twisted. It was a Thursday night. And
I know.
We're both on the East Coast. We both had to work. I was in the same situation. I mean, I was up. I was just living with my brother Scott, and we had some people over, and we were up watching the game. I remember waiting and hoping that the game was going to be over at any overtime, because I just saw the time and knew that I had to, you know, go to work the next day. But I still didn't take away from the fact that it was an amazing game and I was going to stay up no matter what and watch it.
Yeah. Okay. I fell asleep, man. I fell asleep. I'm so...
How can you fall asleep,
bro,
during that kind of
game? Bro, you have no idea. I had two little ones. They were babies, still in diapers pretty much. Dylan was a little older, but my daughter was still... I was, you know, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, I probably stayed up till after midnight. I don't know. I have no excuse.
I'm sure.
Lame.
I mean,
I'm lame.
The game didn't end until like 1:22 or something like that. So.
Yeah. Oh, so I was probably up later than that. I was probably up closer to 1 o'clock. Yeah. So
12:45-ish. Don't give yourself too much credit.
Okay. So I asked everybody on social media. I got some good ones. At Denise Moranti. Okay. At home, watching with my husband and 10-year-old son. This is great. I thought the kiddo really should have gone to bed. But this kid lasted longer than me. But how many chances in a lifetime do you see a game like that? Proudly, he just graduated from Syracuse University. That was a great game, and I remember how tired we all were the next day. Is that a cool story or what?
That's awesome. Yeah.
The kid just graduated from Syracuse.
I mean, it's definitely just kind of a, you know, cherry on top, you know, to that story, especially obviously for their personal story and being fans. But I respect any fan that kind of, because that's how I am. It's hard for me to, I can't go to sleep. I have to watch the game. I look at it like the game's on, it's late and the game's on, and I'm just going to have to just tough it up the next morning. So
yeah. At Tony Staffieri at Madison Square Garden, had to leave to catch the last Metro North before the third overtime. Not a day goes by I don't wish I could have afforded a Manhattan apartment.
Don't us all.
If I could afford a Manhattan apartment, I wouldn't get one. I'd get something else. But hey, right. You know what I'm saying. At Bleed Orange, bedroom watching with UConn fan husband. Ooh, man, that poor guy. Took power naps in between overtimes, worked the next day. It was exhausting. If only Devo did not have such big hands.
Oh. Yeah. That last one sounded like your story.
A little bit, except for she took naps in between the overtimes. I just fell asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. At J. Evans, BCBNJ, something. Sat next to a bunch of UConn fans. Started out like any typical Cuse UConn game, S-talking. By the end, we were all high-fiving, hugging, screaming. It was nuts. Definitely a game I'll never forget. Oh, and I missed the last train out of New York City. At Not Real Jim Boeheim, senior year, spring break, Daytona Beach. Made friends with the eternity of the hotel, which was full of Wisconsin kids all rooting on us. So that's nice. At Jess G underscore SLP, we didn't have cable, so I was streaming through ESPN on my laptop. That must have been awful.
Especially since it's not great now. That must have been 10 years ago. Absolutely terrible.
I remember getting texts from my sister and friend who are watching, but my view was on a delay compared to them, so I had to wait at least 30 seconds to read my text. Crazy game. At Shell WM. Screaming at the TV in my basement for the entire game, trying not to wake up the family. At J. Hurlbutt, 06. I was on spring break and went back to the hotel to watch the second half. Once the game ended, I went back to the bar in my Devo jersey. There you go. That's how you celebrate. Now, if I was on spring break, I mean, there's a great possibility I would not have fallen asleep if I was on spring break. But but some of us had to work.
Probably.
Some of us have to work. At Casey Meek in our living room, holding my breath with every shot, thanking God I'm on the West Coast 3 hours behind y'all because I wasn't going to bed till it was over. Then once it was, too excited to sleep. Yeah. I mean, if I would have stayed up, I could feel that, definitely.
That's but the one thing, yeah.
The advantage of being on the West Coast.
I remember that, too. And I really, I can't honestly remember what time I did go to sleep. But I do remember the next day was hell.
Brutal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At JoJo Russell SU was there. I will never forget how quiet it was walking out. Everyone was exhausted. Love the Big East. Miss it. I don't miss the Big East as much as I used to. There's just some nostalgia to it.
Especially when you look back and you see those kind of teams. You know, when I went back and I saw those rosters and I saw, I mean, you know, I kind of miss, you know, you miss it a little bit.
Yeah, I don't miss it as much as I used to. I'll just say that. We're building something new now. I mean, you know, those memories will be just as good as the Big East memory someday. You know, we hope.
Yeah.
At BP Beano 44, what I remember most was my first day at the new job was Friday morning and being extremely tired that day. But it was so worth it. From the actual game itself, Cuse never led in overtime until the sixth and final overtime. That's right, Paul. Would you listen already? We just told you that. How'd you know?
No, he just remembers, man. I know. Unlike some people that weren't awake.
Fell asleep. At EJ62564, at home and still cannot believe UConn missed so many opportunities to win in the SU with freaking Justin Thomas on the floor. I know. You think if you're at UConn, you're like, we've got them now. Dievendorf is out. You know what I'm saying?
He got some rebounds and held the zone, too.
He did. He actually, what did Justin Thomas do?
I don't think he messed up.
7 minutes and one rebound and one block. So there. At Cuse Zach, he was at Chuck's, RIP Chuck's. Best deal that night was on bottles. Devo hits the shot. What we thought was the end. Everyone jumps in. You hear 100 of clanking beer bottles hit the floor. What that must have been awesome down there.
Yeah.
Roberta says, right in front of my TV until the last ball through the hoop. Greatest game ever. She's rubbing it in. Chris says, home in my living room, went to bed at 2 a.m., up at 6 to go to work. Love Bob Costa's story about him being in Hawaii. I don't care about Bob Costa, but that's okay. Anthony says, Anthony was at Chuck's with Zach. I wonder if they ran into each other. I was at Chuck's with some buddies and remember jumping on the pool table multiple times. He must have been doing his best Dievendorf impression. Anthony, a little nuts, by the way. He's a little nuts. So I can picture that. If you follow him on Twitter, he's at TonyCuse44. And yeah, anyway. Paul, I remember thinking I was completely insane. It was completely insane to me to stay up through the end of the game several hours later at work. Yeah, I mean.
Yep.
Right, Joe? That's what you thought?
Look,
I fell asleep.
100%.
I fell asleep, woke up the next day, and was brushing my teeth, checking the score. And I was so happy. I didn't even think about it until later that I actually missed all that. But, you know, I mean, I could come on here and give you some wonderful story about how everything went down for me, but it would be a lie.
Well, yeah, it would. I mean, again, it just comes down to, where you were in your life. I mean, obviously, if you're a college student or, you know, younger or something, and you were in a situation where you could have maybe done something like that.
My thing is, too, is that I was freaking tired at work, too. I remember being tired at work. I remember that next day work sucking, and I missed two overtimes. So, Jeffrey, I was on a 7-month deployment abroad, the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower in the Persian Gulf, watching bits and pieces of it between aircraft recoveries. Surprised to hear and see it was going well beyond regulation. Jeffrey, thank you for your service. If you were able to catch bits and pieces of that while you were working out there like that, man, hey, you know, you take that. So
that's definitely, it's cool that he was even in a situation where he could do that. So I remember when I was overseas, it was the year after we won the national championship, and I barely got to see, I think, half the game, I think, when we lost to Alabama in the Sweet 16 or something like that. So it's good to see that by 2009 they had better, you know, better things for the military guys so that they could keep up with stuff like that, because I had trouble doing that when I was over there.
Yeah, so that is it. I'm glad you all participated in that. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for giving another Q-story a listen. We appreciate it. These are evergreen, so they can always be used up. And
give us your feedback.
Yeah, give us feedback. Got so many more of these that we can do. It's not even funny. And they won't all be an hour. You know, I think the first one I did was 20 minutes. So
you get me on there, and I'm going to talk a little bit. So
exactly what I was going to say. That's where I was going. Yeah. So that is
and not only feedback, but also ideas. You know, some fans throw out there. If you got some interesting things that you might want us to maybe do something like this for, you know, just throw it out there. Maybe we'll give it a
give
it a thought.
I'll research anything and put it on here. I enjoy it. It's fun. That's why we do this. We don't get paid for this. So, you know, come at us with your ideas. Give us your feedback. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening again. And as always, for Joe, I'm Sean. We're out.
Peace. Thanks for listening to the Q's Militia Podcast, the fan's voice with Sean and Joe.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery
starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.